I'd like to call the Legacy Finance Committee meeting to order. We have a quorum. Welcome, everyone. I'm quite excited to get back together and together in person. How exciting is that to see everyone and to be with everyone? So I think we're going to start with introductions. So I guess I'll start. I'm Chair Lilly, and I've been lucky enough to be on this committee for a few years, and I'm quite excited. It's a the speaker likes to tease legacy people that we're in this happy place, and we get to do happy. A lot of good things. And she's not wrong. We are really lucky to be stewards of this this money that was approved by the voters in 2008, and it's grown. It's quite a large number, as we're going to hear today, and we can do some really amazing work with the other areas that are, you know, other work that goes around the Capitol in conjunction with them and then even on our own. And the four funds are amazing that they touch all of Minnesota, as you'll find out if you don't know already. And I hope you were able to do a little homework. And I hope that you're intentional about asking why you're on the committee and why you wanted to be, because there is some incredible work that we're able to do all over the state. And so I pretty much like all areas of the fund. I guess I asked everybody to kind of describe a little bit about themselves. And I happen to get outside a little bit on our parks and trails. And I'm very much interested in the arts part of Minnesota. That is in our funds. The only mistake I made is I raised a musician daughter. That's kind of mean and harsh, but
we'll tell her, okay?
No, she's incredible in a band. That's, you know, as a father, you she's kind of in between. You want more money a little bit for her, and but it's she's an artist, and it's wonderful. And of course, the work we're able to do in water means a lot to me. And but on and on. So that's essentially me. I hope we have a good committee, and I'm really quite excited about the work that we can do on this committee. So I think I'm going to go to the GOP lead next, Representative Backer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm from Browns Valley, Minnesota. So if you look on the western part of Minnesota, there is literally a hump bump tip elbow nose. For several of my colleagues, they've heard me say that for now my fifth term, but I live in Browns Valley, Minnesota. So there's two of me. I have identical twin brother. I actually represent now. I went down from 99 townships to 77 townships. So it's a large area, all of Traverse County, Wilkin County. So my district's the only district that borders two states of North Dakota and South Dakota. And then I represent Grant County, which is just a little west of Alexandria, and then parts of Otter Tail County, which a lot of folks would be familiar with, is Fergus Falls. So that's my new area. One of the things I do appreciate with me representing such a large, rich ag area. We start the Red River Valley, some of the richest land in the world that feeds the world. It's a clean water fund. I see several projects every time I just, for example, from Browns Valley to Wheaton, we did a project through the Soil Water Conservation Districts. So I love that clean water money used for that because they're able to improve ditches. As we know, when we can maintain ditches and get good water flow, we get cleaner water that goes into Lake Travers. I remember my college days, one of the things that I fought for was a cleaner Lake Travers because you could used to walk on Lake Travers, not in January, but July because it was so green. And us locals have done a lot of things. And this project was a major significance of cleaning out the ditch, making the water, make sure the water flows from the fields correctly and doesn't get bunched in the back. So that's where I have seen a lot of benefit in a ag-rich area. So, and I'm looking very forward to working with all the folks on the committee, and especially you, Chair. So thank you.
Thank you, sir. I think I'm going to go to you, Representative Scarla.
All right, thank you.
That kind of worked.
Yep, thank you. My name's Roger Scraba. I'm from former mayor of Ely, Minnesota. I've been a recipient. Our community has been a recipient of the Clean Water Fund and a lot of arts. We have a old mine, Pioneer Mine, that I'm hoping to keep going. It is our history. It is why my grandparents emigrated from Slovenia to Ely. And if there's some way I can hold that heritage together through this committee to keep that mine going, I will try. Some of the projects, our big one right now is the Clean Water Fund. We have a wastewater treatment plant that we're redoing, and it was really huge that we're doing it. Representative Backer, actually, I think I also border two states, Michigan, Isle Royale, and Wisconsin. But it's through Lake Superior, but I don't know. But I also have Ontario, so another country. But we share a lot of this legacy amendment. I won't say it was meant for northern Minnesota, but a lot of northern Minnesota benefits from it. So I live there, so I use it. But a lot of people come up and. I want to continue to try to keep that this same what we're doing with this money to keep our culture and the way we like to portray ourselves to the rest of the state. So with that, I need to say the other communities. I have the largest physical district to represent in the state of Minnesota. It's from Lake Superior to just about Lake of the Woods, from International Falls to Two Harbors and everything in between. And Silver Bay, Grand Marais, International Falls, Little Fork, Big Fork, North Oak, Tower, Lutzen. These communities all have benefited from this committee. So at some point, we're gonna see some more of those folks here. And I look forward to representing them and working with you all. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Many of us are lucky enough to be on Chair Lee's committee and have toured every corner of the state, including your district, thoroughly.
Yeah.
Representative Farr.
Thanks, Chair Lilly. So Brian Farr, I represent District 22B, which is a little bit of Scott County, most all of Le Sueur County, one township in Rice County, and then some of the northern parts of Blue Earth County. So start in Jordan at the stoplights in 169 and go down to St. Clair, Minnesota. Just excited to be on the committee and learn more about legacy. I understand I have a test coming up soon, so.
Representative Heitzman, welcome back.
Thank you,
back.
Mr. Chair. I represent the Brainerd Lakes area. Have done that for four terms. This is my fifth. And my primary interest in this committee goes back to a bit of a memory. We all were around when the legacy amendment was on our ballot. In Brainerd, I remember walking into the Gander Mountain store with a big sign in front that said, "Sportsmen vote yes." And I'd like to continue to remind folks coming to the committee and folks on the committee that it didn't pass by a large margin. And I'm always going to be advocating for those folks that were led to believe that the constitutional amendment was going to benefit them directly in some way. And when we start getting around the edges of that, I would like to remind folks that it should directly benefit those that supported it. And so that's the focus that I think that the committee needs to have, and glad to be a part of that process. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to introduce myself. Representative Fu Lee from District 59A, North Minneapolis. How the legacy funds have touched my district or the city of Minneapolis is too numerous, but I had the opportunity to visit a recipient of one of the arts grant, Hopewell Music in North Minneapolis, where they tried to bridge the a gap between music education and, you know, a lot of our residents, mostly residents of color, who may not have the means to get arts programming, music programming on the north side. So I really appreciate the efforts that the legislature have put into the arts and cultural heritage fund. And I think, you know, my interest in serving on Legacy, having been here for four terms now, is the intersection that we have with bonding, like you mentioned, especially our parks and trail. And I think that there's a lot of work that we could do that overlap with each other. And so I'm really looking forward to working with you and the committee and making sure that we make smart investment so that we could add on to that in capital investment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is my mic working? Okay. I'm Samantha Vang. I represent the Brooklands. This is my third term and my first time on this committee, and already I can feel like this is one of the more exciting committees to be on, so I'm happy to be here. And, you know, not a lot of people know this, but as a kid growing up, I was part of one of the few Hmong dance group back then. And so to see that what more we can do with the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund is very exciting, and I look forward to exploring more of that.
Representative Finke.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for having me on your committee. My name is Representative Lee Finke. My pronouns are she, her, and I represent District 66A, which is St. Paul, where I live, Falcon Heights, Lauderdale, and a portion of Roseville. I'm very excited to be on this committee. Just by way of introduction, I am a filmmaker. I am an artist. I'm very excited to be a part of our ability to make sure that everyone is receiving funds who can. When somebody asks me about Minnesota politics, I always tell them about this ballot initiative and that we, as a state, funded the things that make our state what it is. So, you know, parks and trails and water and sports, and everybody should be benefiting from the work that this does, because this really is what makes our state our state.
Representative Trump.
Yes, I'm Ethan Cha, representing Woodbury 47B District, and I'm here, and my area of interest, is clean water for East Metro cities, and so I'm here because of that. But I just want to share my experience. As you know, we're looking at preservation of wetlands and just wildlife. As a cattle rancher and a farmer and a horseman, you know, the preservation of our wildlife and our lands is very important to me, you know. And when it comes to parks and recs, I was a refugee. I grew up here in Minnesota, and we didn't have iPhones and internet back then. And so what we utilized was all the parks and recs to, you know, its best utility. So I'm very happy to be here with you, Lily, and I heard you were going to be the chair. That's why I'm here. Thank you.
Hope I live up to that. Representative Hurd.
Good morning. Good morning, Chair Lilly and committee members. I'm Kali Vang Hurd, and I'm a state representative in 64A, which is St. Paul. And the easiest way to remember it is, instead of naming all my neighborhoods, I represent the governor and where he lives on Summit Avenue. So that's my district. This is my third term, and this is my first time serving on Legacy. I always end up on taxes or property taxes because of my finance background, but I'm really excited to be here. And I'm here because all of the issues that Legacy touches is a core part of who I am as a person. The arts actually raised my children, who've been in theater and production since they were 4 and 8 years old, and they've performed all over the state. We also, as a refugee to this country, Representative Cha mentioned, we did not have the privilege of being able to participate in arts and culture. And so we really relied on the public programs that were available to us. And I feel like that is what actually helped me be a well-rounded person to get me to the place that I am today. And I am immensely honored to be here. And I do want to say that as somebody who has been to the Boundary Waters and did a portage, 10 portages and 20 miles in 3 days, I think that this fund is for all of us, not just northern Minnesota. And I'm here to help protect all of that, and as well as also just addressing that, you know, I am also a sportsman. And to be honest, I did vote for this, but I didn't remember much about it, because it's not because people don't know. And we're just trying to honor certain people who voted for this legacy. But it's that a lot of times community members, especially those from underserved communities, don't even know that these types of ballot initiatives exist, what they're voting for and what they would get from that. So really to represent all Minnesotans who would benefit from this, not just for those who voted. And I'm really happy to be here to represent those who may not be aware or politically involved because of circumstances. Thank you, Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Representative. So we're quite blessed to have amazing staff. And so I'm gonna just kind of work around. Molly, you're right there. So I'm gonna start with you and then work around. We have really on both sides of the aisle, we have amazing team and then the nonpartisan as well. So we're really blessed in this committee, and I've just found all of you to be resources to every member, and I hope that continues. But Molly, thank you for.
Well, thank you so much. I'm Molly Peterson, and I am in DFL Caucus Research, and this is a very near and dear committee to me. I've been working on this since 2004, including trying to get it on the ballot and get it passed. And, you know, Representative Heintzman's story is very similar to a story I have, where I went to do visibility on Election Day in 2008, and I went to a polling place, an area that was a lot of very new Americans, very new people who had just become residents of Minnesota. And I went to go talk to all of them, and they already had a sample ballot with this checked yes. And they all kept saying to me, no, this is a top priority for us. This is clean water, and this is parks, and this is what we're going to do. And kind of that special feeling that that Cabela's and these folks all agree on the exact same thing. So whatever differences we have are bridged by that. So I think of them a lot when I'm doing this work, and I hope that this committee continues to honor their commitment as their first time voting in the United States. So thank you.
Thank you. So, Ms. Davis?
Thank you, Chair and members. My name is Mary Davis. I was Mary Mullen. You can call me either one. But if you email me, please email me at mary.davis, because there is a nice young woman here who is also Mary Mullen in the sergeant's office. So we get mixed up a lot. I do arts and cultural heritage. I work in the House Research Department. So policy stuff, bill drafting, and amendments related to arts and cultural heritage, I can help you with that. And I've been working on the committee for 10 years, I think.
Thank you. Ms. Taylor?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'm Janelle Taylor. I'm with House Nonpartisan Research, and I cover the Outdoor Heritage Fund, Clean Water Fund, and Parks and Trails Fund. So, like Mary, you can send drafting an amendment request or research requests related to those. I also staff the Environment and Natural Resources, and I've been around the legacy amendment since its beginning. Thanks.
So my committee team here is next to me, and Ms. Priestley, go ahead, please introduce yourself.
Hi, everyone. I'm Madison Priestley. I'm the new CLA for this committee. I grew up right in Wisconsin, but on the border of Cottage Grove, so basically been in Minnesota my whole life. And I was lucky enough to live in Duluth for 2 years and experience everything that Northern Minnesota and the North Shore has to offer. So this committee is very exciting for me to be a part of.
Mr. Molzan.
Chair Lilly, members, my name is Mike Molzan. I'll be your committee administrator.
Mr. Hagemeyer?
Mr. Chair, I'm Brad Hagemeyer with the Nonpartisan House Fiscal Analysis Department, and I have covered the Environment and Natural Resources area as well as the Legacy Committee, but I've covered the three, the Clean Water Fund, the Arts and the Parks and Trails Fund, and the Outdoor Heritage Fund. And Ms. Roberts and I have, Ms. Roberts has done the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund in the past, but I think we'll be kind of sharing that a bit more this session.
Thank you. Ms. Roberts?
I'm Helen Roberts, also from the House Nonpartisan Fiscal Staff. And as Mr. Hagemeyer said, I have covered arts and cultural heritage off and on since the amendment passed. I do have some, we're just going to say he's going to be the lead this year because of some other obligations, but I'm still trying to cover it. I also cover state government finance, and there is a lot of overlap between the agencies that are funded in this committee through the Arts Fund and then in state government through the general fund.
So I think that's it.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
The best. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Amy Zipko. I do GOP research. I've been with the House for 13 years, and this is, I think, my third year on this committee. But a lot of the funds go through Environment and Natural Resources, which I've covered since I've worked here.
Thank you, Ms. Zipko. Sorry.
That's okay.
Again, we are very blessed with the STAR team on the staff, and I'm certain that there'll be resources for all of us as we move forward. So I think we're going to move into the update on the legacy budget. We had the forecast that came in, we all heard about, and then we can hear what it means to us. And so, Mr. Hagemeyer, I believe you're going to take us on a journey of what it means to the four funds.
Sure, Mr. Chair. I can walk through the legacy fund reserve calculation sheet that everyone has in their packet, or hopefully has in their packet. So on the top says legacy fund reserve calculations, November 22 forecast. You'll see it's divided by the four funds, each with their own box of numbers here. The first subset will be FY24 and 25, which is our current budget period, and then you'll see it on the far right of each box. There's a 26 and 27, which is a planning estimate. But since the legacy funds are supplemental in nature, we don't have a base going forward for appropriations at all. Under the Outdoor Heritage Fund, you'll see the total amount available in the first year, FY24, is $170,621,000. And then in the bottom middle in that highlighted box, you'll see the number $320,308,000. That's how much would be available for the entire biennium. The Outdoor Heritage Fund typically does have annual recommendations, though, so you'll be getting a recommendation coming forward for FY24 only, I believe, from the council. And then the other funds are biennial appropriations, so you'll have FY24 and 25. The reserve calculations were put in, there's always been a recommendation that there should be a reserve so the funds don't go negative based on the forecast. It, a handful of years ago, was put into statute that there should be a 5% reserve based on the tax receipt number. It just helps with the fluctuations of forecast to keep the funds positive. Based on that calculation is how we get to the numbers that are available. Then if you go to the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, you'll see for the biennium there's $193,181,000 that are available for appropriation. Under the Clean Water Fund, there's $315,283,000 that's available for the biennium. And you'll notice that's quite a bit of a change drop from last time, and there is a change in how some of the carry forwards are calculated at MMB, so it's a bit lower than was previously calculated last session. And then under the Parks and Trails Fund, there's $135,264,000 available for the biennium. And I believe that's all I have on there, unless members have any questions.
Any member questions? Representative Hurd.
Thank you, Chair Lilly. Just a quick question then, because I'm used to like working in pensions where there's $70 billion. I just want to make sure this is in thousands, so then the total for this biennium is only $964,036. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it is in thousands. Sorry, on the bottom of the little notes, it does say all values in thousands. So it's $964 million is available for the biennium. And then I should also note that this is based on November forecast, and then the actual appropriations will be based on the February forecast, and then the reserves will be recalculated based on the February forecast.
Thank you.
Representative Eng.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering if you can explain what makes a change into the fiscal year 2026-2027, and what's the difference of that?
Mr. Hagemeyer.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm assuming you're just questioning how the number is so large in the future years. It's just based on how this spreadsheet is set up. Right now, there are no appropriations or no base appropriations because they are supplemental in nature. So until the legislature acts and appropriates funds, I don't show any expenditures on here yet. So once the expenditures occur or get added in here, then those future years will be reduced by that same amount of money. So right now, the calculations are just assuming a 5% reserve going forward, and then all that money's building up because we only do annual appropriations and there's no base. So in effect, they'll be similar amounts each year, but until there's an appropriation made, that's how they're calculated.
Thank you. Mr. Hagemeyer, I have a quick question on the Clean Water Fund. Is there something that's going on there? I keep hearing about like $20 million is missing or something weird. So I just want to get to the bottom of this.
Mr. Chair, yeah, that's why I kind of mentioned that the number was lower than what you may have seen last session. It was how MMB was calculating some of the carry forward money that was appropriated. I think previously they showed some money that in last session in the February and November of 21 forecast, they were showing some money that canceled, which still had appropriation authority on it. So they took those cancellations and put them back how they should be calculated. So it was about a $20 million difference in what you were seeing last session compared to now for some money that still had appropriation authority existing on it.
Any other member questions? Representative Hurd.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, one more question.
Oh, okay.
So for those of us who haven't been on this committee before, would it be possible for us to maybe just get this from the maybe two previous bienniums so that we could see the change over the different bienniums? Would that be possible?
Mr. Hagemeyer.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I can get you something. It changes with every forecast, the amounts that's available and how many appropriations are made, but I can give you a historical reference of how the tax receipt number at least, because they get complicated with the cancellations and availability of appropriations and things, but I can give you the appropriations and the tax receipt numbers historically.
And Representative Hurd, we could send out to all members how we spent the money the last few bienniums. That actually might be helpful for everyone to see what previous committees have done and the choices that have been made. So. Representative Farr.
Yeah, thank you. So, Mr. Hagemeyer, are there earnings in these dollars? Are they, and how much would that be?
Mr. Hagemeyer.
Sure, Mr. Chair, Representative. I'm assuming you're thinking investment earnings.
Right.
Yeah, it depends on the fund. It's just held in the state treasury, and most of them have appropriations on them, but the money is still sitting there. So it gets a rate of return, but it's kind of small. It's not invested as, like, at the state board of investment where you get a higher rate of return. But you'll see under each of the boxes, the third line down is investment income. So under Outdoor Heritage Fund, it's about $2.5 million a year. And then under Arts and Cultural Heritage, it's $157,000 per year. And some of these, it depends how much money is actually sitting in the account in fund at a certain point in time. Arts and Cultural Heritage, Parks and Trails, they kind of get spent faster. Outdoor Heritage, a lot of their appropriations have quite a few years that they're available for, so they have a bit more balance sitting there, so it gets a little bit more, but it's not invested as, yeah, like SBI, where it gets a high rate of return.
Good question. Mm-hmm. Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's a lot of new members on the committee, Mr. Chair, and just clarification, something that I wondered on day one, and I'm going to go ahead and ask today. There's recommendations that come to the committee in all of these subject areas that we're seeing on the spreadsheet. Is this committee a rubber stamp, or can this committee change those recommendations?
Representative Heitzman, you've been around the building for a while, and I think that's up to this committee to figure out how we're gonna move forward on what is before us. I would challenge people, and it was actually going to be part of my closing speech, is we are all new members. You know, Representative Murphy's not here. Representative Erdahl's not here. Basically, you and I are the only returning members, I believe. And we, you know, I think looking around the room, I think everybody needs to be aware that they need to sell their product. We've been funding a lot of areas. I think many of them, if not all of them, are, you know, good, but they need to step up and really be accountable and present bills and, to really make an effort to say why we're funding in particular areas. So I guess that's a longer answer than and I'll probably dig in more at the end of the meeting, but I think it's a very good question. We have a lot of new members, and I think everybody needs to step up their game and just say, why why they're getting the money, what they've done with it, and then what why they should get it in the future.
Thank you,
Representative Heitzman.
I appreciate that. I think that there is somewhat of an expectation from a number of those that come to the committee that this committee will somewhat automatically approve whatever recommendation comes. But, you know, we really do have a responsibility, I believe, to be a backstop. And ultimately, it is the legislature decides how these dollars are spent, if they're spent. And it's a very significant amount of money over, I think we're looking at about $1 billion every year. And we should take that very seriously. And if there are questions that need to be raised, this is a place to do that. And I hope that if there are problems that may be identified in some of the proposals, I hope this group would have the fortitude to say, you know what, we're going to make sure that we address that. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for that answer.
Representative Scarba.
Mr. Chair, switch subjects again.
Yep.
But ask a question to Brad. The last couple years, I from my anecdotal experiences, seems like people have been spending a lot of money in Minnesota, and if we have a higher tax sales tax receipts, do these numbers reflect that? And to go back to Representative Herr saying, you know, we could see what was back there. Would we see it with that?
Mr. Hagemeyer.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yeah, you definitely see over time the amount of money being appropriated out of these funds has increased just as the GDP of the state and the right. state budget as a whole has increased. These are based solely on tax receipts, income or sales tax. For the rest of the budget, we also have income tax and corporate taxes and things like that. So they are a little bit more volatile. That's why we keep a 5% reserve. But going back historically, we have been appropriating more money each year typically. Maybe there's a fluctuation here and there, up and down, but they have been increasing over time.
Okay. Representative
Mr. Chair, I read through what I could about what this committee is, and the 5%. Is that based on the 5% of the original, 5% of current, 5% of what is anticipated to come?
Mr. Hagemeyer.
Mr. Chair, like I said, that was added, I think it was in 2016, it was added into statute, and there's always kind of quasi-recommendations that we should keep a balance because the February forecast comes and all of a sudden we're negative, or next November, and then we have to figure out how to take money back that has been granted out and makes it difficult. So the 5% reserve was for that purpose. It's based on the tax receipt number, so under these boxes, the second line down. So it's based solely on the tax receipt number, not the balance forward, not the cancellations of any kind, because those are a little bit more unpredictable at the time when we need them. So it's based on the tax receipt number.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Finke.
Thank you, Chair Lilly. And some of my question was answered there, but I was, you know, a follow-up to what Representative Heintzman asked about if the funds are spent, and I would just like to get a sort of baseline if, you know, is the purpose of this committee to spend this money and to find good ways to spend that money, or do we, you know, historically keep a lot of that from not being spent for various reasons, like you were just, I'm just curious sort of the spirit of the fund, which in my estimation is to fund good things. So I'm just curious how we sort of operate in that space.
As chair and as a member of the committee for a few years, our intent is to spend the money and to invest it into good things all over Minnesota. So that's our intent, to be able to pass a bill that goes across the street and the Senate does the same and goes to the governor and becomes law. So we're hoping to do good work, and I'm certain that we can.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hagemeyer. Do you have a question? So I want to, my vice chair, I would like to introduce you, too. Everybody else had to introduce themselves, so either you want to do that now, or you can do your question.
I just have a question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to find out how we spend the money for the life cycle and to make sure that equity is included. And I would like to take a look at it and make sure that it's diversified and make sure that we invest it in the money in the right ways. So would you able to share with us how we spend it the last cycle of?
So, Vice Chair Hussein, before you got here, there was a question from Representative Herr to get the information for our last few cycles, and so our intent is to hand that out to all members, including yourself, so everybody will get that, and then they can kind of see what was done, and then we can use that as a roadmap or a start for the future. So Representative Hussein, my vice chair, welcome. I imagine you got tied in the traffic. I see you could take your coat off. You must have had to run in here, but we're glad you're here. And please just introduce yourself for the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Samakap Hussein. I do represent District 65A, which is not a far away from here. And I apologize if I was late today. I have a sick child and who was up all night. And I'm excited to be the vice chair and make sure that equity and make sure that we invested all Minnesotan across the country, across the state. And I look forward to working with you all. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I hope your child is okay. Representative Herr.
Thank you, Chair Lilly. And I'm sorry, this will be my last question. I don't think of them all at one time. My apologies. So I'm looking at this, and it looks like the breakout between each of the four areas is like 33% outdoor heritage, 20% arts and culture, 32% clean water, and 14% parks and trails. Is it statutorily stated as how this is the percentage breakdown, or do we have leeway in how those buckets, how they make up the budget?
So when it went to the voters in the ballot question, it was broken down into these the four categories by percentages. So then we just continue the four percentages divided. So 33% for outdoor heritage, 33% for clean water, and is it 19.75 for arts and cultural, and 14 and a quarter for parks and trails. So it's a very good question, but it was voted on or set up in with the passing of the vote.
Thank you, Chair Lilly, and I did my estimations kind of roughly, so. But I did just want to say thank you for the clarification on these funds. Though some of us are new to this committee, we are not new to the legislature, and we know that in every committee we have to sell our product to our chair and to our entire caucus. And so I appreciate Representative Heintzman's question, because I think it's never a given that we think anything we put forward is rubber stamped. So thank you for that clarification and allowing us to fight for the things that we want.
Thank you. Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did reference this before, but perhaps our research gave me this packet, and I can tell you, if everyone had it, it explains everything so perfectly, the percentages, where it came from, how it got here, and I would hope to share it with everyone. So everyone's on the same sheet of music when we get it. So maybe we can get that to you all.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
I think our team has something similar. Molly, I actually read it about three times myself. But it's
good.
But I'm not judging whose is better.
We can take a vote.
I'm not getting in the middle of that one.
Take a vote.
So, well, thank you, everyone, and thank you, Mr. Hagemeyer, for, and again, I just want to keep repeating this. Our staff, nonpartisan staff especially, is just really there for all of us to ask these questions, and so if you can either knock on their door, or maybe they don't want to, I don't know, but they're always available, and we're so blessed. So I think we're going to switch gears here, and then one-third of our fund is in the outdoor heritage area. And so we're going to have Mr. Johnson. Are you ready to come forward? Each fund has a little different setup. So the outdoor heritage area has a council, and they've been meeting all year. And there's members, I believe, Representative Heitzman and former Representative Eklund were voting members on the committee. There's 12 members, and so they vetted projects. I got here the little book. It's pretty thorough. I asked for a copy because former Representative Green always wanted a copy, so I'll offer this to anybody that wants it for their evening reading or whatnot. And but they vetted these projects. As you can see, it's a huge number, money-wise, that they're deciding. And but they put a lot of good research into doing it, and then they put together a package, and I believe it passed 12-0. And then they had another meeting where they met and decided what to do with the surplus, or with the new forecast number, and it was an additional, 21 million or something that came in, and they decided how to allocate. And I'm hoping that you'll talk about that. And so these are recommendations that come from the LaSard Sam's Council. And again, Mr. Johnson and his team are available to all of us. They're actually, he can tell you where their office is. It's right on the ground level. So instead of going through the tunnel to the Capitol, you take a right, and you can just knock on the door and anytime, and he's available for questions. So, Mr. Johnson, thank you very much for coming, and go ahead when you're ready, sir.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for having us here to present. My name is Mark Johnson. I'm the Executive Director for the LaSard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council, and with me is the Assistant Director for the Council, Joe Pavelko. We'll be splitting up this presentation a little bit, and I'm sure you'll have more questions for us, but like the Chair said, we are always available to come to your offices, meet with you, provide you more information. We are nonpartisan staff, so we're here to help, and we just act on behalf of the Council as well, help the Council. On the slide presentation in front of you, we'll jump through that, but I'm going to take you back in time a little bit, and some of this you've already gone over with your questions, but if we go back to November of 2018, the voters of Minnesota voted upon ourselves a new constitutional amendment called the Clean Water, Land, and Legacy Constitutional Amendment. And that amendment has a 25-year life. It expires in 2034 unless it's renewed. During this time, the Constitution actually said that this would be a new 3/8% sales tax that we put upon ourselves, strictly for the use for clean water, land, and legacy purposes. And there were four dedicated accounts that came out from that, or four dedicated funds. The Clean Water Fund, which receives a third of those proceeds, the Outdoor Heritage Fund, which receives a third of those proceeds, and then the Parks and Trails and Arts and Cultural Heritage Funds, there are two of those, that split the last third of the proceeds. So approximately over the years, about $100 million per year goes to the Outdoor Heritage Fund, and the same to clean water, etc. The Outdoor Heritage portion is defined in Constitution as being that it has to be used to protect, restore, and enhance wetlands, prairies, forests, and habitat for fish, game, and wildlife. So very prescriptive in how it went through. There's also more guidance in statute, which is in 97A.056, and that called for a few things. It called for the formation of the LaSard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council, which was very unique because it's the only council within that, it's the only council that was formed specifically in statute from the constitutional amendment proceeds. It's part of the legislative branch. As I said, we're nonpartisan. It has the direction to make funding recommendations to the legislature. We do not appropriate. The council makes recommendations for those appropriations to the legislature, and the council vets the programs, etc. Another thing in the statutes is it required that there be a small grants portion, so there could be a lot of local uptake of these funds. And from that, the Conservation Partner Legacy Program was defined. We call it the CPL program. That's for small grants from $5,000 to $500,000. And then grants that are requested to come in for $500,000 or more go before the council itself in a separate vetting program. The council itself is 12 individuals, 8 citizens, 4 legislators. 4 of those citizens are appointed by the governor, 2 citizens by the Senate, and 2 by the House. And then the Senate and the House each appoint one DFL or 2 legislators, one from each party. We'll say it that way. If you notice on the list that's on the flyer, you'll see that there are a few of these that have their terms expired on the first Monday of January, so the 2nd of January. They're waiting either reappointment or replacement, but they serve on the council until that happens at the pleasure of the leadership. And they're in the House here. We do have one vacant appointment right now because we had Representative Rob Eklund from International Falls, who was on the council, and he was not reelected, so we're waiting his replacement at this time. And each of the other citizens that have expired or are expiring have all indicated their interest in being reappointed, but it's all the pleasure of the appointing authorities. I should back up. Notice also that I put in there under that representative for the DFL, this could be you, or your name could be here. We'll see who that individual is. The speaker will appoint that person. The council has a proposals process that it goes through where there's a call for funding requests or an RFP that's put out, and that's put out in April of each year, and the process lasts about 15 months. So it's put out on April 1st, ends the end of May, and then through the summer, the council reviews those or vets those proposals and to try to figure out what are the best ones and how much should be applied to them or should be recommended for funding to them. This year we received, and each year we received about 3 times as much money or as there is available. This year I think it was around $350 million in requests that came in. And the bill is going to be somewhere around $160 million, I believe. At any rate, by the time January comes around or December comes around, the council has not only looked at the paperwork and scored that based on criteria that the council has, but it has also had in-person hearings, generally the end of August or the beginning of September, where those organizations or entities come forward and explain in person their proposals, have to sell their wares, so to speak, or sell their proposal. The council has 4 major goals in how they look at these and how they vet them. The first is really accountability. This is public money, so there has to be transparency. They want to see what leveraging efforts there are of the funds to ensure that there actually is protection, enhancement, and restoration there in the outcomes. The second is conservation focus. Is it really concentrating on conservation opportunities, providing multiple benefits that are timely and are actually going to happen on behalf of fish and wildlife? And also science-based is a third goal. So it has the projects have to be strategic. They do have to align with the greater conservation needs of Minnesota. And they also have to coordinate with approved conservation plans like the Minnesota Statewide Conservation Preservation Plan. That's just one of them. There's a whole list of those types of plans. And lastly, it's a competitive process. So the council looks at, they weigh the immediacy of the need. They also look at the capacity of the organization. Can they really do this, what they say? What's the rationality behind the proposal? Does it make sense or not? Is there, between the costs, is there also leveraging of other efforts and other funds that come in? Is there good community involvement and uptake on this? And those are just some of the factors. So the council takes its job very seriously. And as Representative Heinzman and Chair Lilly can vouch, they both have served on the council. It's an arduous process, and there's good debate throughout. We are about in the middle or a little past the middle of the constitutional amendment's life. This is the 15th cycle we're in right now. In the first 14 years, the legislature has appropriated over $1.5 billion from the Outdoor Heritage Fund for restoration, enhancement, and protection of habitat throughout Minnesota. $258 million has already been realized in leverage from federal, local, and private contributions to leverage those funds going into as match money, so to speak. 109 million of those funds of the 1.5 billion have actually been allocated to the small grants program so far. And that CPL program has generated about $16 million in match on its own in funding as well as in-kind contributions. And then it engages thousands of volunteers across the state. It's amazing. About 1.3 million acres so far across the state have already been restored, enhanced, and protected. Those are acres that are finished. And there's always about 4 or 5 years of projects that are still ongoing. It's always being added to. The CPL programs have had over 900 grants, that small grants program, for across the state. Again, that's restore, enhance, and protect habitat. And they have produced over 339,000 acres of those efforts. 230 of those 900 grants have been awarded to the 7-county metro area or within the city limits of Duluth, Rochester, and St. Cloud. So looking at what do we do in the urbanizing area, that's a big part of it. Also, the larger grants affect the urban area as well. Who gets the money? It's a broad spectrum. We do have agencies, the DNR and the Bowser, who are recipients. They are not the overwhelming recipients by any means. Local government units, the tribal entities, counties, cities, SWCDs, watershed districts, etc., are also recipients. And then there's a short list of nonprofits that have been involved in the receiving these funds. And these are only this basically is the larger grants. The smaller grants, boy, it's a whole another list that goes really deep, and it's very fun to see. If you go on the website for the council, for the Lasard-Sams Outdoor Heritage Council, you'll see a map similar to this one. And it just gives a representation of where finished projects have been across the state. If you zoom in on it, you'll see that all those dots are balloons. And those balloons all have numbers on them. Like some of them, if you look at Hennepin County right in the middle there, there's an ML 2015, ML 2010. If you click on one of those means Minnesota laws of 2015 or Minnesota laws 2010. And if you click on like the ML 2010, it'll open up another screen for you, a subscreen that tells you exactly where that project spent money and what they did and who received the money and how much money and what were the results of it, because those are finished projects. If you click on one of the other ones, like ones that says number 7 or 14 on a balloon, it'll open up like a 7. You click on that one in Hennepin County, it opens up. There are 7 more balloons, meaning there are 7 more projects there. And each one of those you can click on and see that same type of information. So, again, we're trying to give more information. By the way, I should apologize. This is an old map. This is probably a couple of years old, so there's lots more balloons on the map. Every couple months, there are more coming on of finished projects. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll hand it over to Mr. Bevelko to continue with the on-ground work.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. I really do value that you're so detailed like that, that your information is readily available and that you've made a strong effort to know where each dollar is going. That's just it's a great example for the other funds. Mr. Pavelko.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Joe Pavelko. I'm the Assistant Director with the Lasard-Sams. We get a lot of questions, especially people that don't deal with the legislature or conservation. What exactly is the Lasard-Sams Council and what exactly do you do? And I wish there was a good way to explain it, and the best way to explain it is to show pictures. Just talking about it doesn't do justice. We do, we fund thousands of projects across the state dealing with fish and wildlife habitat. So I'm just going to go through a few projects really quickly and just show pictures of this is what happens on a daily basis with the fund. So a lot of money is spent on wetland restorations. If you look at the picture there, there's a cattail slough, not a lot of wildlife habitat. That wetland is drained, and so what happens is there's in the soil, there's a drain tile which takes the water away from the wetland and puts it into a stream. And so what often happens is multiple tiles are put in. You can see there's water flowing out of the tile as it's being braked. So in order to restore a wetland, you have to break the tile. So tile is broken. oftentimes now, maybe 20 years ago, there's science said not to do soil scraping. Soil scraping is, you'd actually take like a bulldozer or something and actually scrape out the wetland. And as years have gone by, erosion has brought topsoil into the wetland, and it's not very productive. And so now what's happening is you're breaking the drain tile, scraping out the wetland, and it looks something like this when it's done. And hopefully you want something that looks like that with wetland vegetation and open water that wildlife can use. So these are the kinds of wetland restorations that are happening out there. And the size of the wetlands can vary from the size of this room or even the size of this table here, all the way to thousands and thousands of acres. And they all provide benefit to wildlife, and even the smallest ones do. And here's a little fella. This is Ducks Unlimited, one of their employees' sons, just looking at a wetland restoration there after it's been scraped and restored the waters there, but the vegetation hasn't grown. And after time, after that's probably a year's worth of time, vegetation is starting to grow, and the water's still there and providing the wildlife habitat. And again, these are huge, from 20,000 acres to 2 acres. And to show value and for me to be a good father, I feel it's my duty to make sure that I have my kids in here. And so this is my son, Marcus. Oftentimes we'll go hunting, and if you look in the back to the right there, you can see there's a tiny little wetland. And even those tiny little wetlands provide wildlife habitat. And so if you're out dove hunting, this is a great spot to go. And you can see this is his first animal that he's ever harvested hunting. And so that was a fun memory. And this was on a wildlife management area that was funded with Outdoor Heritage Funds. Here's Marsh Lake. This is in western Minnesota. Huge project, thousands of acres, very famous wetland out in western Minnesota. Huge migratory route. There's always thousands and thousands of ducks and geese that use it, but it wasn't functioning very well. So DNR and other partners used OHF money to enhance it. So they built the water control structure on it, and their goal was to draw down the water, which stimulates vegetation growth, and you've seen that in previous pictures. And then after the vegetation gets in there, then the wildlife respond because they need the vegetation for a home. Same thing with Swan Lake. Swan Lake in Nicollet County, this is the largest prairie pothole in North America. Same thing, they built the water control structure to manage water levels for the benefit of wildlife. So these are the kinds of projects that are happening. And again, some wetland restorations only need a tile break, and some wetland restorations need a huge construction project like this. So the cost value, or the cost range, from $500 to thousands or millions. Here's another picture. This is an aerial photo of the Tiger Lake WMA in western Carver County. This is off of Highway 212. So if you were to take 212 into Eden Prairie and then head southwest, you'd run right into this. Tiger Lake, it's a shallow lake. It's managed for wildlife, and partners are using OHF money to acquire property around it and restore the wildlife habitat. And again, it's the wetlands and the prairie uplands. And you'll just see all the dark spots there in inside the red. Those were never there 7 years ago or 10 years ago. That was all either pasture or just field. And now all the wetland restorations have been completed, and there's water out there for wildlife. There's more after pictures. That's what it looks like. So when someone asks, what does OHF do? What does the LSARD Council do? What does this money do? That's exactly what it does, and you can go out and actually see it. Another part of wetland restoration is cattail removal. Cattails are good plants in some instances, but not always. And so a lot of partners spend quite a bit of money doing cattail removal or cattail burning. As you can see, there's a spray unit on the helicopter. They're actually flying out spraying herbicide on the cattails to kill the cattails to provide better habitat for wildlife. The lower left picture there is a picture from Voyageurs National Park, where they have cattails that are starting to invade into the lake, and they're actually mechanically removing the cattails from the lake. And again, it's to provide value for wildlife. There's my daughter. We went up north to Detroit Lakes this last year, and we had the council had a tour of all of the projects that were completed up there, and that's just a field that was restored with OHF. And the amount of butterflies that were in this field as you walked, and it was like snow just going up into the air. It was really neat, and she just loved that. So that's my daughter. Here's what oftentimes grassland restoration looks like with OHF money. This is a field that's been prepared. So you can see it's bare soil. When you plant prairie grass, you need the soil or the seeds to have good contact with the soil. And so oftentimes it's very, very bare when you start. And then when you're done, you have grass. Another part of grassland restoration is prescribed fire. It's the top left corner. The bottom right, they're interseeding, so they're taking a grass stand and putting other kinds of flowers in there to make it more of a diverse stand. The top right picture is a harvested seed. So oftentimes partners will plant prairie, and then they'll take a big machine and they'll harvest that all those grass seeds and then use that for new restorations. So not having to buy seed from everybody all the time. Do a lot of stream restoration as well. This one's in St. Louis County. Just shows a before and after. There's hundreds of these projects all over the state. Same thing here. This is in southeast Minnesota. You can see the erosion along the stream. Very little habitat for trout. When it's done, it looks like that. I also do work in the forest. Lots of acres in the forest, lots of projects to enhance the forest diversity, tree species. And after those projects are done, oftentimes you get a habitat response with moose. So in this this last fall, we went up north, looked at some projects with the council and partners, and they did some prescriptions to try and provide quality habitat for moose. And although we didn't see the moose, we saw evidence of them with you know, their droppings and footprints. So that was fun to see.
And Mr. Chair, if I may continue.
Mr. Johnson.
Yeah. There's so much to tell that we can't tell it all here. But we wanted to make sure that at least we gave you a taste of it. We also wanted to mention a few other things. First of all, we reach out every year when the call for funding request goes out. That goes out to thousands of outlets, for news outlets, social media outlets, conservation organizations, nonprofits, local government entities, all of the counties, all of the cities, the soil and water conservation districts, the watershed district, everybody. We try to contact everybody. Even when we get out to the vast majority that there are, and we are updating our server list every year, every month, and we're updating our media list every month with social media and whatever it might be that comes in. We also employ an outside entity, another agency that, not an agency, a company that puts our press release and our information out to, again, all of the press outlets, be they printed media, printed or television or radio, whoever it is, as well as social media. So we duplicate a bit, but that's okay because we want to get the message out. I personally also send a letter, and you will receive a letter from me probably in February, with a link to our call for funding request. And what I do is I ask every one of you in that letter to please think about forwarding the letter on to your constituents or your constituent areas, and all the nonprofits, the local government units, whoever they might be. And then also let me know if you know anybody that you would like me to talk to. If anybody has questions, your constituents or yourselves, we are willing to meet with you and talk with you. We've done days. There was a Representative Sonia Erickson a couple of years ago before COVID. We had one day where we did three different meetings in her district with her, three different locations. It was a marathon, but, man, it was fun, and we got to a lot of people. And there were grant requests that came out of that. Not just for us, but others that went to Clean Water or went to Environmental Trust Fund or went to Arts and Parks or Parks and Trails or Arts and Cultural Heritage. So we just try to help make sure that people can find the money, know how to get to it, and if it's not Outdoor Heritage Fund that's applicable, but some other, we try to lead them there and help them make the right connections there as well.
I really want to commend you. I know that's been an effort the last few years to really to do that. You know, a lot of times members will come to someone on the committee and they'll say, well, we didn't, you know, the certain group didn't get a deal, you know, or they didn't get any money or they didn't know what to ask, and you've really stepped up. So there's a bunch of things that you've done proactively. So as members, it's kind of on our court too to help. So when this goes out, this will go out to all members, and to help if you know someone that hasn't traditionally got money, and they can help navigate, and then they'll help them through the process too. So it's not just here's where it is on the website kind of thing, you're done. They'll actually babysit it. I hate to use that strong of a word, but it works. It's kind of help them navigate how to apply. And then I think the key thing too is sometimes this may not be the fund, Lessard Sam's money. So it may be Clean Water, it may be Parks and Trails. So you'll help navigate, and I really commend you about. Representative Hur, you have a question.
Thank you, Chair Lilly, and I'll make sure to ask them all at the same time so you don't have to come back to me 10 times. Just a quick question about the grants. Are these one-time grants to an entity, or can they be recurring grants to the same entity?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair and Representative, they can be recurring. There are many that are phases, each one of the grants, depending on what they do, will have a life of 4 to maybe 7 years, or if they have federal funds, sometimes longer than that, just because of the availability of funding. But yeah, they can come back. We have some that are at phase 12 right now, and those are the programmatic appropriations. So DNR, Bowser have those types of things, also some of the nonprofits.
Represent her.
Chair Lilly, Mr. Johnson, if we could also, I see that the list of the grants recipients are like all nonprofits or government entities. Do you also fund for-profit entities that do this type of work?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair and members, I am not aware of any for-profits. They are not, I don't believe that they are restricted, but there are for-profits who will be contractors with a nonprofit. Generally, when public money is going out, I think it's generally preferred that it goes to a nonprofit or to an agency or a local government unit. There are many for-profits businesses that are contractors within this. Mr. Pavelko, any further comments on that?
Mr. Pavelko?
Mr. Chair, members, Mr. Johnson is correct. I can't think of any instances where it's been to for profit. But one thing I will say is that, we have phases every year, but they still come before the council and put an application in. It's not an automatic, you get it for the next 12 years. They come in every year and apply, and then the council, and obviously the legislature decides whether or not it's worthy of the funding.
Representative Hurd.
Thank you, Chair Lilly. Thank you for that clarification. It's very helpful to know that. And then on page 8, you had a breakout of over 230 grants awarded to the 7-county metro area. Is it possible that you could get us the, like, what is that percentage over, then how many grants total for that time period of 2009 to 2020? So what is the percentage of 230 of the total grants given out? And then versus dollars, percentage of dollars that were given out during that time period for those 230 grants versus the rest of rural Minnesota. That would be really great if we could get that information. And we don't need to get it today, Mr. Johnson, just at some point. I'm just a data person, love to just kind of see the numbers. Thank you.
Mr. Johnson's nodding, so I think
we will get that to you. Yes.
You. Please get that to all members if you can. That would be.
Mr. Chair, we'll do that. We'll get that to your staff, and if they wish, we'll send it to everybody or your staff can. That'd be great.
Representative Bang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Johnson, and for your testimony. I think it provides a nice overview of as a new member of this committee. one question will be, when you start the proposal process, usually how many applications do you get? What percentage of those applications move forward, or make the recommendations list?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair and Representative, this year, I think, this last spring, I believe there were 55 or 56 applications that came into the council, and those are all for $500,000 or more. And then, of course, all the smaller ones go through the CPL process, and they have multiple openings or opportunities each year for people to apply. The of those 56 coming up for recommendation in the bill that you will see later this month or next month, I believe there were 50. I think there were six that were not funded, and those there were all specific reasons for them. Only one of them really wasn't ready for prime time. It was one where there were some. There would be some permitting problems with the projects, and there wasn't public access to where the projects were going to be, even though it was on water. So there were some, by digging through the weeds, the council found there were some other things within the vetting. They asked them to go back and look at it again, come back if they can clean up those things. There were a couple that were, two or three that were recommended to go to the CPL, the small grants portion, because they could actually break it up into phases that fit very well for them and probably was a better fit overall. And then there were a couple, there's one I know that was way up by Carlstead that'll be coming back next year. They were asked to come back. They were not scalable, and very, very few of the requests come in and get what they ask for. This one was said they were not scalable, later thought maybe we could be, but we weren't quite sure, so they were asked to come back next year.
Johnson. Representative Heitzman, maybe you could tell members too after your question, because you've been on the council and just how it works, how thorough projects are vetted and questions that are asked by the citizens and other members, or should be.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can mention a few things. I do have some more specific questions about the coming recommendations to this body, and Mr. Chair, I would defer to you if you'd prefer that some of those specific questions aren't asked today. Maybe it'd be appropriate for them to be asked at a later time, but my thought was Director Johnson may want to be prepared to address those more specifically in that setting, and if I brought it up today, it might be helpful, but your thoughts. I can go either way.
If you feel it's helpful, I think it would be for the other members.
Sure.
Just so to kind of give everybody a sense of how we're going to proceed. We had Mr. Johnson come in because it's, you know, one of the bigger funds, and then we'll kind of do that with the other areas. But then later on, there'll be bills that'll come through. You know, he'll come back with his proposal, the water projects and arts and cultural. But so we're going to have a few swings at the bat. But I certainly wanted Mr. Johnson in particular to come in early because it's one of our biggest funds, and I think questions, I mean, you know what you're doing. Go ahead.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. I just don't want it to come off as adversarial because it really isn't. I'm just looking towards, I think what we all want is transparency and accountability. The Lessard Sams, I think I would start off by saying, is a very good process. I've served at a number of different committees that meet like this, like the LCCMR and others, and I think that we do have a good process. There are some opportunities I think that we could, at this level, in this committee, address a few issues, and while going through projects, we do see some challenges, we see some great opportunities, and we take advantage of that. As was mentioned earlier, there are many phases quite often that come to the Lessard Sams, and so you have folks that are reoccurring. And in, I think, the majority of those scenarios, that's good for Minnesota. There are some examples where I hope, and I alluded somewhat to our responsibility in my opening comments and during my introduction, that we don't want to be, in my opinion, a rubber stamp here. And we do need to help make sure that transparency isn't made the equivalent of accountability. We literally need to be that backstop here in this committee, in my opinion. An example of that that I'm just going to quickly mention, and maybe Director Johnson can speak to this at a later date. It might be better and more appropriate then. But, you know, in our last meeting, we had to do what is known as extensions to availability of appropriation. And essentially, there's projects that come with a timeline, right? And if they don't meet that timeline, we have to provide an extension. Some of those projects, I think, are very deserving of that. There's, for example, a worldwide pandemic or discussion of how that effect might affect, you know, be in place in these project areas. But then there's some others where I struggle, and one of them was this Lower Mississippi River Partnership project. And there was quite a long discussion, and the council is nonpartisan, but you could argue that there are partisan lines. And along what I would view as somewhat partisan lines, the extension was awarded in spite of some concerning elements. The project is funded, I think, in 2017, if I recall correctly, and you could correct the record if I off in my facts. And it has been given extension after extension. It originally had, I believe, almost 30 acres that was going to be fee title acquired. And it has since been reduced to, I think, in the neighborhood of 10. And yet the cost remains the same, and there's lots of questions. If we could look at a few of those things, Director Johnson, and maybe be able to go through those together, that might be helpful. Not now might not be the time, but I do want that to be something that's a part of our discussion as we start looking at the next batch of projects coming through, and we could work towards some accountability there if it isn't already present. So that's just one example, Mr. Chair, and I'll have a few others that I hope we can discuss before we just move on when we do have a proposal come to the committee.
Thank you, Representative Heitzman. I appreciate it. I value that you'd been on the commission, and I happened to watch the last meeting where they did discuss, and I came into it not really knowing what was going on. I was watching it on YouTube or whatever you guys have going there, and which is a great resource to be able to watch, and we all can do that. I recommend that you do go and watch some of these meetings to get an idea how the projects are vetted. And there was some controversy. The extensions, we did a lot of them, honestly, and you mentioned that in your speech. We did a lot during COVID, I mean, for obvious reasons. We had to. And I don't know the details of this project, and I know there was a divided vote. I didn't get a sense of it being political, but I don't know who's who on the council at this current moment, so maybe it was. I don't know. I'm not questioning you there. Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Heinzman, thank you for the question. We'll dig into that. I'll have the information at my fingertips. What I could ask, too, is if there are any other questions that people have going into the bill presentation and stuff as we come forward later in the year. If you have a question ahead, do you want to give me a heads up? We'd love that, because then we can have more of that information at our fingertips. Otherwise, we try to be as prepared as we can. And sometimes you get the answer you want. Sometimes the data will actually say, this isn't that great. So we love the questions.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. One of the questions, and it didn't come from our members at this time, but I'll get it often, and we do have a lot of new members, and I don't mean any disrespect by this, but Mr. Heitzman, Representative Heitzman, alluded to it about the multiple phases. So I think I saw some phase 15s even or something in there. And so the assumption is that maybe that's not doing good work because it's not a new idea or something. So somehow it would be good for our committee to know, you know, that the work that, you know, is, and maybe I don't want to name names, but the tall prairie grass is in phase whatever, and then why? And then, you know, because I've looked into some of them and I feel like they're doing good work, but I think there's assumption as that's phase 15, what are they doing? So somehow you're going to have answers for that, whatever, right? I mean, anyways, I just throw that out there for all committee members. I just wanted to say I was looking at here, and there's, for many members, you know, I'm going to pass this around. this is available for everybody to take a look at, but they're really detailed. And but one of the things that stood out to me is, you know, with the world that's changing, there's a lot of work that is done in, I mean, granted the focus is hunting and fishing, but a lot of this goes to environmental good work, like you showed the pictures of the prairie restoration, the butterfly, but there's also like huge conservation, you know, carbon sequestration or whatever of the prairie, you know, with the prairies, the west wetlands, and they said that a lot of these wetlands are some of the best, and you do forest, you know, work in your area. So yes, you get a moose that comes in, but they're also helping all of us getting better air. And but so anyways, I want to thank you for coming today, and again, say where your offices are, Mr. Johnson, so that members know where you are.
Yep, and Mr. Chair, if you go, we're in state office room 55. So if you go down to the tunnel level, and like you said, just before you go to the Capitol, take a right instead, and we're about the second door down. We're right next to the LCCMR, or Environmental Trust Fund.
So we have, we're lucky to have a couple of real outdoors people. We have Representative Heitzman. I know he likes to shoot a few things, but we also have Representative Herr that's like the real deal. So I don't know if you ever have a chance. We have some newer members. If you've ever seen the video of her on the House floor, I think when she talked about her hunting experience, I challenge any of you to match that. So I know I can. But thank you, Mr. Johnson. And
Mr.
The rest
Chair,
of your
team. Mr. Chair, members, thank you very much for this time.
So any other further questions from members at this time? I'm quite excited about us getting together. It's an amazing opportunity to be responsible for these funds that were approved by the voters. I would have a little different argument than Representative Heitzman, big surprise there. But I would say that, you know, they did polling a few years ago, and it continues to be hugely popular with the voters. And for some of the reasons that both sides of the aisle members have mentioned, you know, that they're touching areas all over the state doing good work. But I just want to throw out there as chair that we have a lot of new members, and I really challenge you to really, you're going to have to up your game. You're going to have to, you know, we saw today, I'm just going to say as a chair, I really appreciate what Mr. Johnson does. We know where, like, the money goes. Particularly, you can go to a dot and you can click on it, whether you agree with that project or not, but you can say, well, that went to that. And so I challenge people in all our areas or our funds to do the same. I had a presentation this week from the Greater Parks in Minnesota folks, and you can kind of do the same thing. You can go through there and you can see where each dollar. So I challenge my Metro Parks and Trails friends. I want to see where your dollars are going, every dollar. And I want to know that. And, you know, the DNR and the clean water area and in other areas that all the arts and cultural groups, I expect you to live up to that. You know, it's come up. It's, you know, every meeting last year, it was, we brought up the equity issue. And, you know, across the street, a lot of our presenters were told that they couldn't, they'd have to write two speeches essentially. So I don't think that's going to be the case when they go across the street this year. And we have the same expectations we had last year with the committee we had. And we haven't met, but I would imagine that the same goals to make sure that these funds reach every Minnesotan, whether that's the 100-year-old lady to the new little, you know, the newborn or the new little kid that is, you know, on the east side of St. Paul or in Minneapolis, or, you know, just making sure that these funds work for everybody in Minnesota. So be ready. Be up your game. Bring bills to members and, you know, sell your product. Sell why you need the money, why you've gotten it, why you feel like you should get it in the future. So with that, I thank everybody for being here, and thank you, Mr. Johnson, for your presentation, and certainly thank you to our nonpartisan staff. Everybody really is available. I expect that, and they do it on their own. I mean, they did that even before I was even chair. But I'm looking forward to the session. I think we can really do great work together. And thank you. Thank you. We are adjourned.